The Survivor Specialist, Phil, Will, and Blake are back, and we continue talking about season 50, even when it's almost a week over, a week in the past. But we're going to be talking about it this time a little bit differently than we have throughout the season. Throughout the season, it was a lot of frustration with certain things that came up, excitement of certain things that happened, a lot of different feelings, a lot of ups and downs. But now the season is over, and we get to look back at the entire thing and really say what worked, what didn't. Was Survivor Season 50 an overall success? Was it not? How do we all feel about everything that went into this season and into the year and a half of hype around it? We got Will, we got Blake. How you guys feeling almost a week after Survivor Season 50's end?
It's pretty meh, right? Like, I think there's different ways to measure success with the Survivor season. I think there was a lot of excitement. I think you need to look at it at the context of this isn't just any normal Survivor season. This is season 50. This was hyped for a year and a half. Like, this was supposed to be monumental. And I think, at least for me, I'm left feeling like, just kind of another season of Survivor, another season of new era Survivor, which often leaves you scratching your head and going, well, how did those three people make the final three? Or why did that person win? Or like, it feels kind of random and directionless and doesn't really feel like Survivor. That all being said, I think there is a lot to like about the season. And I think there's a lot to look back and be like, that was fun. That was cool. This was super entertaining. I think we've kind of reached a consensus that I've seen in the comments, or maybe Phil talking to you and even you, Blake. Like, I think a lot of us can say, like, we were entertained many times throughout this season. This just isn't a very good season of Survivor. The show is not what it used to be. This isn't a version of the show that we want to continue watching or need to see more of. But it's still Survivor. It still had some of our favorite players, and, you know, a 24-person cast or training players is going to yield some entertainment value. Maybe not in the way that we like, but that's kind of where I'm at.
Blake, where are you at?
I think a quick thought process is like, all right, the last 13 weeks we had an episode on a Wednesday night. And are you devastated you're not watching an episode tomorrow? Or are you kind of relieved that you're not? Mm-hmm. And what would they have done? Would they have done, behind the scenes, or watch Jeff go through all of his notes on this season? Or if they had given us a real reunion tomorrow night, would you watch it, or would you go, ugh, I have to do that? And I'm kind of excited to have a Wednesday off for the first time in 3.5 months or whatever. And that's something where you're like, oh, maybe I'll get to watch the basketball game. Maybe there'll be a baseball game on, or I'll go eat dinner on a Wednesday for the first time in 3 months. But it's something where, like, as a Survivor podcaster, you probably should want to watch another episode. But as soon as it was, oh shit, we're not watching Devins, we're not watching Ceri, that final five episode was rough. And I know we said there's three or four things that I liked about that episode, but I am glad there's not an episode tomorrow night to watch. I know that's very hypocritical, being like, hey, come watch our podcast after this is all over.
We're doing another one Thursday, everybody. So please make sure to tune into us, even though you're excited that there's nothing Wednesday.
But I don't think, I think this is more of like a, we're trying to do the work for CBS of like, what didn't work? What did? What do I want to see on seasons 53, 54, and 55? And then please, God, never do this twist ever again. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I mean, we'll dive into all those twists for sure, but I think that is such a fair point about, are you excited or are you not that there's nothing on your TV on Wednesday night? Blake, you mentioned a basketball game. The Knicks swept the Cavs, so there's not even an NBA playoff game tomorrow night. Are you excited that you're going to be sitting down at 8 o'clock and you're going to have to find something else to watch? That I always looked at it when I lived in New Jersey. We didn't get out of school until like the middle of June, late June, and I always looked at it as when Survivor ended, that was kind of the beginning of summer for me. Like, when I was still in high school and everything, it felt like, okay, Survivor's over. We have 3 weeks left of school. Memorial Day is behind us. This is great. Like, it's summertime. are you, is that a feeling that other people have right now? I mean, we've been doing so many podcasts about Survivor season 50. I seriously think we're around 150 podcasts just dedicated to this season. When you take into account how many episodes we did every week throughout the season, all of the stuff before the season, like, it's crazy to think about how many podcasts we did. We're still going to do one more. Blake and I did an audio only one. If you're only following us here on YouTube, we did an audio only one yesterday about Aubrey Bracco's journey through Survivor from Korong through Survivor 50. So if you want to go check that out, it's over on Spotify and podcasts and all of that. We didn't end up putting it on YouTube, but it is that weird feeling of when a season ends, sometimes you're so hyped, you can't wait for the next one. Or it's all the talk of the town. Or, you know, I remember back when we were able to do the tell-alls, it would be, okay, who can we get for a tell-all? What are we going to do? What are we going to do? What are we going to do? I don't know if I have that feeling this year. Not that we'd be able to do tell-alls anyway, but I don't really have that feeling of, like, wanting to know more behind the scenes, wanting to know more of what was going on. I feel like I know everything. I don't feel like it would change my perspective on the season. And so for me, that's how I know that it's probably a bottom 20 season overall.
Yeah, I think if you are ending a season, you're like, I got to listen to the exit interviews and, like, really figure out what happened. And, like, there's like some burning questions that the show couldn't really tell us earlier on because it would spoil the ending, or some just unresolved issues between players, or why didn't this get considered? Or, you know, they show someone making a move. I remember Emily in 45, she started, like, bragging about her move that she made at Final 8, and then they vote her out at Final 7. It's like, Emily, why did you do that? And then she actually had, I forget what the specific reason was, like, I was interested in hearing, like, Emily, like, what was the thought process behind that? Like, there's not really any burning questions I have surrounding season 50. I understand why Aubrey won. I understand why people could argue, okay, Jonathan maybe made more game moves or was more in control of votes, but, like, there aren't these questions of, like, who needs credit for this, what really happened here. And I'm sure a lot of people are listening to the exit press. I have not listened to a lick of it. I don't know if you guys have, but I think that is a pretty fair indicator of, like, your interest or your excitement about a season is when it concludes. Are you still going to want to, like, eat up all the talk and content and learn all the secrets to a season? I really don't feel I need to do that at all for season 50.
It's interesting too, because, like, season 48, none of us liked. And yet doing the season 48 exit press, I enjoyed that for the final five, because I truly wanted to know, like, what was it about Joe that got him no votes? Because based on the edit, it seemed like people really liked him. What was it about, could Mitch really have won the game if he got to the end? What was it about Camilla that made it so that she was so dangerous that you wanted to vote her out at Final Four? Where did Kyle feel like he stood on stuff? Where did Eva feel like she stood on stuff? There was conversation to be had. And I think the thing with Survivor Season 50 is, it's like the movie that you go see and it's like the summer and it's entertaining. But once it's over, you leave that movie theater, you don't really think about it anymore. Because there is no open-ended ending. There's nothing to discuss. There's no what's going to happen next. What are you saying, Will?
We're heading to an open something.
Oh, we are heading to an open era. That's true. But we're not, like, there's nothing else. Like, it all came together with such a bow. And Ceri has the line on the red carpet saying that she was locked in as an Aubrey boat coming into that final tribal. And a lot of people were, because they wanted a good representative for season 50. And they all thought Aubrey would be that. And whether that's their whole reason for voting for Aubrey over Jonathan or not, to me, it doesn't really matter, because I understand why Aubrey won. I understand why Jonathan lost. I understand that Rizzo probably didn't have much of a chance of winning, even if he had one fire. I understand that Tiffany had her back against the wall, and that was the only way she was going to get there. Like, Survivor Season 50 doesn't leave us with those burning questions like Survivor 32 does, right? When Korong, with Michelle versus Aubrey and Ty, and Sydney in fourth place. Like, the conversation around coming out of that finale, did Michelle make the right move voting Neil off of the jury and all of that? It was so massive. And you get those kinds of seasons throughout the history of the show. Even Sam versus Rachel was a really good conversation. I just feel like coming out of 50, we're sitting here and it's a little flat. It was a little flat coming into the finale. It was a little flat during the finale. It's a little flat after the finale. But we also got to talk about all the things that Survivor Season 50 did and see what we thought worked and what we thought didn't. But right now we're all just kind of like, yeah, it was a season of Survivor and it's over. And none of us are bummed that we're not doing it tomorrow night. I mean, all of us are living our lives, right? We're doing Ko wrong. That's what we're doing anyway. So let's start it off here with this discussion of what worked and what didn't. And Blake, you're not allowed to go on a 15 minute tirade. That is the only rule for this podcast. You have to keep yourself under control. We've all heard you bitch about Mr. Beast, okay?
Is Will allowed to go on a 15-minute tirade?
No, nobody's allowed to do a 15-minute tirade about Mr. Beast. That's the message here. Celebrity cameos, when they released the preview for Survivor Season 50, was the biggest talking point probably coming out of that. People cared more. We already knew what the cast was, so people didn't care so much about that. But that's what everybody was talking about. So, celebrity cameos. Did they work? Did they not work? Should we ever, ever, ever see a celebrity cameo on Survivor again?
I'll let Blake go first.
Oh, God. All right, everybody, buckle up.
I like... No. This isn't how I thought this was going to be structured, so it's kind of being like... not taking the wind out of my sails, but it's like, if you don't want me to talk shit about, this is my least favorite part of 50.
No, you can talk shit about it. We just don't need a 15 minute tirade about everything you hate.
I can
about
go
Mr.
first
Beast
if you want, Blake.
Cool. Go, Will.
I don't know why I took the wind out of your sails. I don't know.
Yeah, no, the wind is gone, man. I think, you know, I was probably in the minority of people after 49 saying, like, let's wait and see on these celebrity cameos before we judge them. I don't think they're inherently bad. I don't know if there's any single one that I did not like. And I think my issues with the celebrity cameos and the celebrity twists don't really have to do at all with the celebrities themselves or even involving celebrities in the show, whether that's in note form through Billie Eilish or Jimmy Fallon or on island through Mr. Beast or Zach Brown. It's the way they formatted them, one, in that spending time with certain celebrities made other parts of the season feel rushed. And I think that's kind of what we're doing here. Like, we're doing a retrospective, looking back at the whole season. We're not going episode to episode. We're not going even twist by twist. I mean, maybe we will, but like, I'm looking at it as like a cohesive unit of a season, everything together. Now that we have all the information of how the format, how the season was planned, like, yeah, Zach Brown does kind of piss me off because that's probably an episode where you needed to boot two people to avoid the Blood Moon, which is the worst twist in the history of the show and the worst twist of this season. Yeah, Mr. Beast getting, what, did he get a 2-hour episode and we eliminated one person? Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, that's not great. Like, I think that's my issue with it, that it's not that Mr. Beast is there. It's not even the twist of flipping the coin. It's that we spent a 2-hour episode of a cast with 24 players in 26 days, and we only eliminated one person, and that forced us to eliminate two people in the penultimate episode. It forced us to three episodes in the Blood Moon, like, or three people in the Blood Moon. I keep pointing back to that. It's like, if they were able to construct those better within the confines and limits of this large cast size in the not getting any higher of an episode count, then I think this would all be more palatable to me. The fact is that I just can't trust Jeff in production to introduce these like one-off segments in, without dedicating way too much time, not thinking about the ramifications that it has on the rest of the show and the rest of the format. So like everything individually, like again, Billie Eilish Idol, I think that mechanic is very interesting. We've nailed it to death during the recaps. The issue was they put three of them out there. That should have been on one beach. There should have been other types of idols on other beaches. And I know the argument, well, if that tribe gets a Billie Eilish idol, then there's no way for them to get a real idol. That's fine. That's okay. Like if you can't get an idol, because we're going to switch in like whatever, 4 or 5 days, 6, 7 days anyway, like, you can find one the next time. You can find one on a journey. You can get an extra vote. You know, Savannah and Colby can go do their thing. You could be at XL. There's other ways to get advantages in the game. We know the show is going to do that. So that doesn't bother me. It's not unfair. That's an interesting mechanic. They dropped the ball with putting three of them in there. An advantage that requires secrecy and passing of secrets and keeping information away from others and then making that the sole idol mechanic for the season is just really bad game design. And that's not Billie Eilish's fault. It has nothing to do with Billie Eilish. It has nothing with her interest or her post interviews or her slap in the face later. If they want to say, oh, this is like Adam Scott, who was at the Survivor 50 finale and seems like a true fan. And like 5 seasons from now, Adam Scott has an advantage idea and he's in the notes. I have no problem with that. If it's a good idol, if it's a good mechanic, a good twist, I'm here for it. So, yeah, I don't think anything individually with the celebrities was bad other than like cohesively, it took up way too much time, and that's where they really, really dropped the ball.
All right, Blake, go ahead. You do you.
Okay, so I think one thing I could maybe just stick to is we didn't want to watch an episode on Wednesday. So if these are good things, we want to have them happen again. Do I want the Billie Eilish Boomerang Idol to happen again? No, unless we change things. So that's just a no. Do I want somebody to vote themselves out again doing the Jimmy Fallon thing? No, that was not compelling at all. The other twist is, do I want a celebrity to show up and just like spearfish and hang out with people? I know that episode we were like, who else could we do this with? Like, who's a wildly beloved celebrity that could do this? Like T-Pain, Stephen Colbert, like who? Jay Leno? What is Jay Leno doing? That's very facetious. No, I don't want to waste some of my Survivor time on a celebrity. That's not quite what I'm doing. Are we ever going to watch a second Mr. Beast coin flip? I don't think so. So that's something where it's like, I would love for the stuff on 50 to matter or to be part of the hallmark of the show that's reused because it's so good. We have to have that happen again. And I think the end part of like, do you want these letters? Well, it's going to cause some supreme chaos. And then it was just Mr. Beast in the corner sitting there. I do think the Mr. Beast lovers made it out over the Mr. Beast haters because it was like the least offensive one. And it like, this is the coolest moment. If you were saying though, Rick Devens flipped a coin to get $2 million and an idol, that was the coolest moment of 50. I don't think you would want that 6 weeks before the show started. I don't think we're looking for that when we see this cast thing. And it is something where I think that may be the casual thought processes. That was the coolest moment. I also think part of the diehards would probably say that's the coolest moment of the season because there wasn't like, actually, I would say a more subtle one, but subtle isn't over the top like the coin was, is like Ceri saving herself in a 2-2-2. Like, that's a moment I'll be like, holy shit, she played her ass off. And she wasn't dragged to six. She earns the sixth spot she got there. But if some of the diehards are like, oh, that coin was amazing, it's like, damn, we're kind of losing the sauce here or whatever. So the celebrity cameos, which one of these would I want to replicate or whatever? We've talked it to death. I never want to see the Boomerang Idol ever again. And that there's nothing where I'm like, oh, I like this. Bring this back without changes.
I think that's what's so fascinating is you can't really talk about the cameos without talking about the twist that they brought in with them. So there were really only two cameos on the season, right? It was Zach Brown and it was Mr. Beast because Billie Eilish and Jimmy Fallon didn't come out.
Sia didn't even come to the reunion.
Sia wasn't the reunion. I'm pretty sure she was. She just like didn't go on stage. It was really weird. Like she was definitely there. I'm like 99% sure she was there.
She's so embarrassed of where 50
went. Yeah, she hated the season so much.
She didn't want to show her wig.
She didn't want to give it to Ceri. No, but like in terms of the actual cameo appearances, like Will, you said it, that Zach Brown thing was way too long. We were saying that the whole time. I didn't think it was all that offensive, whatever. But the reward the whole time should have been him going and fishing with the other players. That should have been the reward. They get to like see him do the big spear and all that. And then they come back and they cook the food and everybody's now more involved rather than us just watching him and it takes up time and it's a waste of time. The Mr. Beast was barely on the island. Like he was there for a very short amount of time. So in terms of the cameo appearances, I actually don't really mind the cameo appearances. They never need to do them again, but I don't think they were like a massive failure. I think the twists and gameplay associated with the cameos is what was probably more of a failure, but it comes out looking like a success because the Rick Devens coin landed on heads. If that lands on tails, this season is so poorly regarded by most of the community. and we probably never see a cameo again. I think we could probably see a cameo again. It's just going to be a matter of who's actually going to want to come out and cameo for season 51. That's not monumental.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, at this point, let's just go through them. There's four things to talk about here, right?
Yeah.
I think the Zach Brown, like, if you're not on a 24-person cast where you don't need to, like, rush through voting out multiple people in one episode, you don't need to do that, like, a bunch of times, then this probably – and I didn't mind it in the moment. Again, like, taking it just the episode itself, I thought it was a really cool reward that we hadn't seen, like, a reward that people really wanted to fight for in some time. Usually it was just trips to the sanctuary for the same old thing, and you're only out there for 26 days. So, yeah, you're hungry, but you're not as hungry. And it was a once-in-a-lifetime experience, and I think we both agreed that that was kind of cool. And, yeah, it went on a little bit too long, but it was nothing crazy over-the-top offensive. It just when looking – when zooming out and being like, okay, then we also – dedicated a two-hour episode of Mr. Beast. It's like, I don't think that was inherently a bad thing, and I could definitely see another cool reward. Like, that could make sense.
Yeah, I think doing another reward makes sense, but again, I think they just have to be more involved with the reward. If they're not more involved with the reward, like the players, I don't want to see it. I don't care about Zach Brown giving confessionals about fishing. And now that we know Tiffany got fifth place, and we know that Tiffany was like a puzzle piece away from potentially winning the season and was really well liked by the jury and was really well regarded and like has kind of hit this like next level status where it does feel like she's really, you know, put herself in position to be considered one of the better players of the new era and somebody that people are clamoring for to come back. And Tiffany had two confessionals in the whole pre-merge and Zach Brown had four in his episode. I do think now it's even more fair for people to complain and say, I would have much rather Tiffany had that time since Tiffany was on the tribe that won the reward and she still didn't talk in that episode.
Yeah, so. No, that's a fair, that's an absolutely fair point. We talked about that when we looked at it. The Jimmy Fallon thing, I know people hate that one. That one has not really bothered me that much because Christian volunteered to go. You know, by now in the new era, you know there's a risk associated with going on a journey. That shouldn't be a shocker to any player, especially someone like Christian who knows like what probably pays attention to what Survivor's doing every season. And I know it's like vote for yourself, but if the words on the parchment had said you will have one vote put in the canister for you, like one in the urn, which is literally the name of the twist, and all it said that and wasn't vote for yourself, and you know, you have one against you and you lose your vote, that's not him voting for himself. It's like going up and like write, he's not going up and writing his name down. It's like, but effectively that is the same result. And then I saw so many people comment the worst part of the twist, what made it too punishing, was he had to tell everybody about it. Well, it's like, if he doesn't have to tell everybody about it, then it's not punishing enough, because then it's like, oh, who cares? Like, if there's one mystery vote in there and no one knows about it, then it can't really be used in any strategy or planning before going to tribal council. So, like, that one didn't bother me as much as, like, I don't know. I think, like, the act of writing his name out, I get how that's sacrilegious, but that was just for show. That was just for TV. He was starting with one vote against him at tribal council, and he couldn't vote. That's effectively what it was. And if you hate it, I get it. I just didn't ever reach the level of hatred for that twist. Like, the worst twists this season were not the ones, like, associated with celebrities, at least my opinion. Like, Blood Moon was not associated with a celebrity. So, like,
yeah,
it's really that, too.
And the thing with the Christian vote is, even though Jimmy Fallon was associated with it, it's not like Jimmy Fallon showed up on TV or anything like that, so I didn't really care. Like, you take Jimmy Fallon's name out of that, it's just, okay, this is a production twist. Like, and that's where exactly. That wasn't even really a cameo.
And honestly, so. They say it's Jimmy Fallon's idea. Maybe Jimmy Fallon said, hey, Jeff, maybe it'd be funny if there is some punishment for a beware advantage where they have to vote for themselves. That's just a really funny TV moment. And then Jeff and his other producers workshopped into this journey, and that's what we got. Like, we don't really know the full extent of Jimmy Fallon's involvement. So, again, like, the celebrities existing is not the issue. It's really the execution.
And now I have another layer that's going to kind of get meta.
Okay.
Even in the week after podcasts, we're talking about celebrities first. We're talking about shit that has nothing to do with Survivor. It has nothing to do with our all-star 24 cast. It has nothing to do with the legacy of our show for the last 26 years. It has nothing to do with Jeff Probst even. Some of these people aren't even CBS related. And every single time we did a Wednesday night recap or a Thursday night follow-up or most of the tweets, it was always, oh my gosh, the Billy Irish boomerang sets off a crazy way of events in this episode. Oh, you won't believe what happened when Zach Brown showed up. And it took up all of the like headlines, all of the mindset, all of the thoughts. And instead of being like, oh, is that the episode that like who went home on the same episode the Zach Brown thing happened? And it's kind of like, I actually have to think about that. Like, who did? And like, it's cluttering up all.
Mike White, right? Mike White.
Exactly. And you're like, oh my gosh, like that should
that's
have
a
been
great blindside.
major moment. But everyone that time, instead of talking about Christian, turned his back on his fellow season mates. It was like, wow, the Zach Brown episode was pretty freaking long. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that's frustrating for me because I'm all about paying off our audience, pay off like we're season ticket holders when we're podcasters. We're season ticket holders whenever you are 10% of the Survivor fans of I Watch Everything. And it feels like when you don't give your season ticket holders good gifts at the end of the year or a reason to show up to the arena every week, they're going to be like, what am I doing? And this feels like as a season ticket holder of Survivor, there's a lot of stuff I don't give a shit about that is in the forefront of everything about the show, whether it's like how it's advertised or how it's written about or how it's remembered. It's like, I want to remember the Mike White boot 30 years from now, not that's the Zach Brown episode that was the worst regarded episode of all time.
Which is crazy. Because the Mike White blindside was great, but you're right, Blake. Like the whole conversation, all anybody wanted to talk about when we were doing the recap that night was Zach Brown, Zach Brown, Zach Brown. And I don't think, I mean, granted, you're in the conversation, which is ultimately what Survivor wants to be in. But are you in the conversation for the right reasons? And the answer is probably no, because people aren't actually talking about Survivor. It's like, oh, you know, Bruce Willis is going to be on Friends. Great. Awesome. Like, you don't need to do that if you're a Survivor, though. You don't need to prove that you're like worthy of being watched. And I mean, the real question will be, do they feel that their viewership was up because it's season 50, because they did do celebrity cameos, because they did, you know, whatever. I mean, the numbers were up. I hope they realize it's mostly just because it was season 50 and doesn't actually really have anything to do with the fact that the celebrities were on the season. Yeah. And then you talk about Billie Eilish, like the Billie Eilish boomerang idol. Again, I think we've all talked about that. It's just the design of that, making it public and then having it done three times. And then the fact that we never saw it boomerang, that's just a disaster situation. That's something that you absolutely don't want and can't have. And the Mr. Beast coin flip, like I don't ever want a Survivor season to have a coin flip again. Who knows if we'll get one, but I don't want that. And I think that that's bad. And I do think, right. Yeah, we started off with talking about the cameos. Mr. Beast wasn't the problem. You know, if that twist comes back, it's not because of Mr. Beast. It's because it worked the first time and Jeff wants to try it a second time. But that's one where you just have to say, okay, I put my entire mortgage on black and it hit. I'm not going to then put my entire mortgage on black again. Like, let's move off of that and let's move on.
I think one real quick thought process to finish off the Eilish idol. When we did a big lead up of all of our favorite moments of the show, what makes Survivor Survivor. And I think there was something where it was like either blindsides or idols being played. And that's kind of a good hallmark of what is a good season. And if I think we said the words, if you could tell us how many blindsides there were there 9 blindsides? Were there just 2? Then you could tell just based on that number of blindsides or number of idol plays, you could go, oh, let's say successful idol plays. You could go, oh, shit, that's probably a good season. How many successful idol plays did Survivor 50 have? 0.
Well, technically, Devin's is successful, air quotes, but
he had the most votes. Okay.
Because that was the 2-2-2.
You could probably add in the number of people that go home with idols in their pockets too, because that means it's a blindside. That's like your blindside objectifier. It's like clearly they didn't think they were going home.
And we only had one.
We had Ozzy, so like that's a pretty huge blindside.
So how many blindsides, including Ozzy, do you think happened in 50?
Mike White.
Yeah, Mike White, Ozzy. Is that it? Two. Emily knew she was going. Rick knew he was going. Serene knew she was going. Tiff knew she was going.
Christian knew.
Colby, Genevieve.
Charlie. Yeah, that's a good one. Survivor.
Charlie's was definitely a blindside. I would say Camilla didn't think she was going to go when she went.
So four. But this is a fair point, though. Like, as we're talking about this, All Stars, the big moment was Rob getting on Anita proposed to Amber, right? Heroes versus Villains, the double idol play at the merge is all time, like just another level. Survivor Second Chance, it was, I mean, probably Wentworth Will Not Count, which is another massive idol play. Survivor 34, it's the idol train. Survivor 40, it's Tony voting out Sophie with an idol in her pocket. This season, the big moment is Rick Devon slipping a coin and it landing on heads. That's not what Survivor is. Like, that's a quick, it's kind of like a jump scare in a movie where they make the loud noise and they do that because your blood pressure, you're instantly going to shoot up, but that doesn't mean you were actually scared. And then you watch the movie a second time, knowing that jump scare is coming. You don't jump because it's like, it was cheap. And so, yeah, we had the flip and that's really it. That's really it. I think that is probably the highlight.
Everyone knows that familiar feeling when you just can't answer that one simple question, what's for dinner? Well, thanks to Omaha Steaks, I find myself in that situation way less frequently. Dinner is handled in minutes when I keep my freezer stocked with restaurant-quality protein from Omaha Steaks. And it's not just tender steaks. We're talking flavorful burgers, chicken, seafood, sides, and even desserts, all delivered directly to my door. So whether it's a rushed weeknight evening or a Saturday night cookout, you can have quality protein on hand when you need it. And let me fill you in on a little secret I've been using the past few years. Omaha Steaks proteins aren't just great to have in your own fridge. They also make fantastic gifts. When my dad's birthday comes around, I'll gift him one of the many options of steak packs, and it's an instant win-win. One year I got him the complete cookout collection, which is perfect because he enjoys grilling up everyone a great meal, and I make sure I'm there to celebrate with him, so I get a fantastic steak dinner myself. Win-win. Feel free to use that one. And I want to clarify something for any skeptics out there. Yes, frozen delivery can be this good. Omaha Steaks is known for their meticulous aging process and vacuum-sealed individual packaging. Ship nationwide and arrives frozen, ready for grilling, searing, and roasting with minimal effort and time. No last-minute runs to the store. They can't match the quality Omaha spent generations perfecting. And if you've never tried them, the Burger Perfection Flight is the perfect introduction. For just $79.99, you get 20 premium steak burgers crafted from 5 distinct cuts of meat. We got filet mignon burgers, New York strip burgers, ribeye burgers, brisket burgers, and sirloin burgers, each with their own different flavor and style. So try the Burger Perfection Flight at omahasteaks.com today. That's 20 premium steak burgers for just $79.99, plus get $35 off with promo code BEEF. This isn't some rinky-dinky discount. That's $35 off with promo code BEEF. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code BEEF, B-E-E-F, for $35 off at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details.
In Backtrack by Mark Cameron, the past is prologue for a violent criminal with three names, Ricky Lee Pink. Pink has been rotting in jail for years, plotting revenge against the man who thwarted his almost perfect theft of $5 million in diamonds. That man, Wayne Cutter, is deceased, but his grandson, Arliss, is very much alive, for now. Pink and Cutter are about to collide in a violent confrontation on a floating city in the middle of the water, a massive cruise ship traveling around Alaska's Inside Passage. An experienced U.S. Marshal, Arliss must move fast but cautiously, or he may be the last of the Cutter family tree. As Survivor fans, it's not just the strategy and social dynamics that keep us enthralled. It's also the idea of man versus wild. This concept is at the heart of all Mark Cameron's novels, and it's especially prevalent in Backtrack. It's one of the main reasons I enjoyed this book, and as listeners of The Specialists, I know you will too. If you're an outdoor enthusiast, fan of wilderness thrillers by authors C.J. Box and William Kent Kruger, or just love a fast-paced action thriller from the likes of Brad Thor or Jack Carr, make sure to pick up your copy of Backtrack today. An Alaskan resident and Texas native with nearly 30 years in law enforcement, Cameron is a master of action and gritty detail. He brings explosive authenticity to Backtrack as U.S. Marshal Arliss Cutter's manhunt will employ all his skills and knowledge as a member of the U.S. Marshal's Service. Backtrack by Mark Cameron is available now wherever books are sold. Let's talk about some other stuff here, though. 24 people. Oh, here we go. Ryan Chan, Super Chat. I'm not sure why they did so many split tribal councils. People hated it when Michelle Yee got eliminated and in Ghost Island, so we do it on season 50. I mean, I was going to go to...
We got five people eliminated within two episodes with the split tribals. That's why.
And I didn't mind the power broker, though. I know
I didn't mind it either. I mean, we talked about power broker was fine because, you know, they merged at 17, in quotes, mm-hmm. but that was at final nine. So they've been merged for some time and, you know, have had a chance to build relationships with everyone on their tribe. And so it's not as egregious as, like, let's randomize three groups of five. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I like Power Broker. Go ahead, Blake.
With two people being already gone, it is interesting of, like, were those twists way back when we're like, let's see that again. Like, or I think that's maybe something that I would put into Survivor's head is, like, you guys have so many surrounding things. You have podcasts you could watch. You could do polls. You could literally interview people at the finales or whatever. What are some twists that you saw on a season that didn't have All-Stars that you would want to see All-Stars play through? And it's like, oh, we saw these people say go AstroTurf or whatever. Imagine if Sari had to say that to activate her idol thing. And I'm like, that's an extremely dumb example. But there's a lot of stuff that happened from 41 through 49 where it's like, okay, these were newbies that did this, and maybe they don't have the finesse, and maybe they don't have the skill to nail this stuff. But was there something from here that we were all like, oh, I'd love to see that come back in the future with people that knew what they were doing or whatever? Mm-hmm. And it's like, do that from 41 through 49, do that from 31 through 38. And I feel like they're like, oh, that's a good idea. That's maybe where you could maybe see some silver lining on the clouds of, like, 51 is going to ask that. And you're like, well, why are we asking that for a new cast instead of with our all-stars? Like, the all-stars are the people that we could throw freaking sinks at, and they'll catch the sink and hold it instead of just getting domed in the head and dying off the side.
Well, and that's a good point because, you know, we just watched Second Chance not too long ago, and there's such an emphasis on this is this person's second chance at this challenge. And we know so many of these challenges were repetitive on this season, but there's no focus on which ones are repetitive and why they're bringing them back and why they want to bring them back and, like, what makes it important. And same thing with twists and everything like that. Like, Power Broker was brand new. The Boomerang Idol was brand new. The Blood Moon was brand new. The Exile twist at the beginning was pretty much brand new with two people having to stay away.
The pairs were new.
The pairs were new. Like, what twist was there that was, like, a throwback that we were just happy to see?
And they did that for 40 with fire tokens, where you're like, why are you messing up our – we have all-star times. I want to talk to Ethan about him – being a soccer player that had a charity, and what is he doing now with his knife? Not go, Ethan's worried about if he's going to have enough fire tokens to be able to buy an advantage two episodes from now.
So yeah. That we don't even know what.
Yeah. I mean, there is this, like, idea from Jeff. He stated it all the time for both new players and returning players that, like, it's all about keeping the players on their toes, keep the game unexpected. It's about adaptation. He recently did, I saw, like, a TikTok of it or an Instagram, and it was like Jeff talking to Charlie from Lost. I was like, wait, what? The worlds are colliding here. What is going on? And it was him saying, yeah, we have to add new things to the game to force players to adapt. But he has a lack of understanding of what his additions to the game actually caused. I think it's been talked about a lot in the community, and a lot of people actually come from the Big Brother community saying this, that like all these uncertain additions where the players don't know what's going to happen and what the rules are leads to passive conservative gameplay. And Jeff has not gotten there yet. Like, that has not hit Jeff's radar, or maybe people have said it to him. He does not want to believe it. He thinks if the players know the format of the show and know all the rules, the good players will band together and we will have a pagonging, and he wants to do anything he can to prevent that. And to him, a pagonging is worse than rolling a dice and eliminating somebody at random, because at least the dice is scary and unpredictable. You don't know what's going to happen. I think like 95% of the fan base would say, okay, if modern day Survivor players can get together and actually form a pagonging, we would probably find that more interesting than let's just roll dice and split into random groups every time. Now, we could be wrong in that. Like, I could be wrong. That could be a very online, more like, you know, super fan view of the show, and that Jeff's more dialed in with the casuals that are like, yeah, roll the dice, flip the coin, like draw the buffs randomly, like keep the players on their toes, see what's coming. Players have to adapt. But like, that's where we fall off of like telling a story. And when you randomize things, and when, you know, the whole idea of randomization is that there is no reason or purpose behind it. And if you have no reason or purpose behind your twist or your game design, then how can you tell a cohesive story or an interesting story that you're going to follow beginning, middle, end? When you throw random things that happen, there's no, like, I've ripped on the storytelling and the post-production of this season quite a bit. And I still kind of stand by a lot of flaws that they've done, but I also look, it's like, look what they were dealt. Like, when you're dealt all these random actions and game decisions and moves and twists and vote out, how are you supposed to tell a cohesive story? I imagine that would be extremely difficult to do. So,
well, and it's kind of like if you're in filmmaking or TV shows, people hate coincidences in those, right? Like, that was a big thing. Like, they don't like when they want to see the detective figure it out, not the detective have something handed to him.
The rule for coincidences, it's usually okay to have a coincidence that hinders your protagonist.
Yeah.
If something out of the blue happens and it, like, you know, puts a wrench in their plan. Yeah, they
get in a car crash.
Yeah, and they now have to overcome something else. I mean, that's all a good story is they have a goal. Your protagonist has a goal. You throw obstacle, obstacle, obstacle. It's going to be impossible at the end. They miraculously pull off their goal. If coincidences happen in favor of your protagonist, usually audiences roll their eyes. They feel it's unearned. It's not like it just feels cheap. And you could argue, like, Aubrey landing on a tribe with Genevieve with the numbers to eliminate her nemesis, like, feels kind of cheap. And that's the person who ends up winning. And that doesn't feel maybe why we're satisfied with an Aubrey win, because we saw her get so lucky in overtaking one of her biggest obstacles.
Yeah. And I think that's kind of what my point is here is, like, if it happened in a regular scripted TV show or in a movie, most people would go, oh, I don't like that. Like, they could have done that smoother. That felt so convenient for the person. But then in Survivor, it's almost like Jeff's okay with it being convenient. Like you said with Aubrey, I mean, that's exactly where I was going with that. It's just like she had so many things work out in her favor throughout the season. And that's why Blake and I were talking about on that episode the other day, where do you rank Aubrey all time? I mean, she finished second. She finished fifth. She had one bad season, and then she comes out and wins an all-star season and is a player who adapted and changed her game. She really struggled with big personalities early in her career and then was able to figure them out. But there's so many random things that helped her get to where she was. And honestly, like, there's a lot of random things that helped a lot of people get to where they were. Like Jonathan, if he won, you could say, well, he was lucky that he ended up in a situation where he could blindside Camilla immediately after Camilla blindsided him and Charlie. So that's a coincidence too. There's so many coincidences that are just being set up to happen on Survivor nowadays. And I think that is a big negative, and it does lead to more passive gameplay. And that really passive gameplay, I think, is why people aren't really giving Aubrey her flowers right now. Because if you look at her placements, like, she's right there with Parv and Ceree, and those are two of the greatest players of all time to most people. And you have Aubrey, who has very similar placements and has a win that Ceree doesn't have. And in her first season, really did dictate a lot of what went on. And in Game Changer, she had one or two moves in there. But it just doesn't feel as satisfying for some reason. And that I think comes down to the way the game is designed. And that's what the biggest problem is.
Yeah. And I remember when Blood Moon happened, I'm like, I don't know who's winning this season. That was kind of before Aubrey's edit had stood out to me. Mm-hmm. I was like, you know, there's a very good chance that when we look at the season as a whole, this is just going to like upend everything. And like, it's going to cheapen the result. And I think that's kind of what we got.
Yeah.
I think there's the other thing of there's a lot of coincidences or there's a lot of luck and there's a lot of what, well, why? And it's because there's not 18 people on the beach. There's not 16 people on the beach. There's 24. And so it is, do you have 23 relationships with your winner? Well, not really. They started on a tribe with 8. And we're used to starting on a tribe with 8 where you have 7 people of our winner has a relationship with 7 other people. But now our winner could maybe get a boomerang idol. And they do. Or they do. Oh, they did. Oh, my gosh. She got rid of her idol. It's like all of these thought processes, like there's 24 different people that we're trying to do the loose ends for. Or there's nothing better about Aubrey's game than 12 other people that are just unluckier than her through the middle of the game. And I think that's something that I think is like, oh, did you play better? In some of these older school seasons, it's very apparent. Like the people who go home in the first 7 boots in Australia are worse than Tina and Colby. Are the 7 players, even in Marquesas, it's like, no, we've already changed the meta. Hunter is better than us. We need to eliminate him now. And now it feels like in season 50, are the first 7 people out of the 50 season, is it because they're threats or game players or did bad at the game? And it's kind of like, well, it was a weird tribe swap and they never got their footing, or Christian made a decision and then Christian eliminated and you're like, oh my gosh, like I don't know how to play. I don't know what Mike White could have done differently because he had the best thought process. I don't know what Q could have done differently. I thought Q was going to go home because he was annoying and people were like, he sucks. Like it kind of sucks playing with him because we need people to focus. Turns out Q was a leader of a major tribe and got tribe swapped on the 3rd boot or whatever. And you're like, well, that sucks. And it's weird that it happened on day 7 or 8 because they did let those tribes marinate for those first 6 days. But then we're not really mentioning those original tribes until they say like, wow, Sela really completely cannibalized each other. And Sela like gets voted out from Emily, Ozzy, Emily, Devins, and Sari all go back to back right there where it's like, cool, all of us don't have Sela on our buffs from the beginning. Let's get rid of all of them. And then that final 5, there's no Sela people except for Joe. And Joe is the odd person out on Sela from the beginning or whatever.
Yeah. So are you saying 24 people doesn't work for you?
Which I think we said from the beginning, that was my number one. How is this going to work? And I think the quick answer is it's not going to.
Well, yeah. 24 people for you.
I think it can work. I'm not saying it can't, but I don't trust Jeff Probst to figure it out. Like, I think he, like, there are just baffling decisions that were made on this season. Like I keep going back to the Blood Moon, but the Blood Moon is a result of only doing a single boot in your first 4 episodes. It was just one elimination.
They got lucky because Kyle got hurt, honestly.
Sure. And then we're doing, the Mr. Beast thing again with like that. Like, you had to think about the economics of the season, and not with money, but with people in days and tribals and votes. And that just they just dropped the ball so hard on that. And I think there is a world where you have a 26 day season with a 24 person cast and you find a way to like position the votes so it feels earned, and you're doing double votes, maybe double boots every other episodes. And we remember, look, we do have 90 minutes instead of 2 hours. So like a 2 vote to elimination episode with 90 minutes will not feel as bad as the double boots that we've done in the hour long seasons. Like, what was it like Will and Sunday go in season 33? A number of seasons, especially in the 30s, when we were really going hard on the 20 person cast, it was very much one episode post merge, like final 10, final 11, or final 10, final nine. You would always kind of double up and you get that once a season. That's fine. There was a route, there was a plan here that if they spent more time thinking about it, and I think that's a big issue with Phil, you keep saying the Survivor's gotten very lazy, very complacent, resting on their laurels in a lot of ways. And I don't think they really spent the amount of time and power to design a season for 24 people. I do think, I will go on record, I do think it's possible. It can be done. It's not too many people, but it requires thought and nuance, and they did not provide either of those.
Yeah. I actually don't mind a 24 person cast, but here's the deal. Australian Survivor's too many episodes. They always start with 24. It's too many episodes. I don't want to watch 24 episodes of TV. It's too much. It's three episodes a week. You can't keep track of everybody. They can't keep track of everybody. But here's how easy this was. And I've broken this down a couple times. I'm going to say it again because I don't think 24 people is too much if you do it right. Episode one, you eliminate two. Episode two, you eliminate two. Episode three, you eliminate two. Episode four, you eliminate two. Episode five, you eliminate two. Episode six, you eliminate two. So now you are down to 12 people and that's your merge. And you've eliminated 12 people already in six episodes. 12, 11, 10, 9, 8, that gets you to episode 12, that gets you to six-person finale. Now, if you insist on doing a triple boot because you want to do it, you don't do the Blood Moon. You can do a triple boot, keep it with tribes that already exist. Everybody gets a chance to win immunity. And rather than, oh, we're going to randomize who's on whose tribe, it's we've all been on a tribe together. We know what our dynamics are like. We're going to sit down. We're going to do a challenge. The winner of each challenge survives, just like we saw in Heroes versus Villains. And all three tribes go to tribal council. You do a three-person boot, and you still get down to five people by the finale in 13 episodes. It's so easy. Like, it's literally so easy. And that's what made me mad this whole season. And we talked about it. We'd probably done close to 150 episodes just about this season. No joke. And the thing is, like, if you go back and you listen to our early episodes about this season, we all just assumed the entire pre-merge was going to be double boots. But insisting on doing single boots that we could just do a bunch of double boots in the post-merge, that's where it even starts to feel more random. Because now Aubrey, who maybe doesn't want to work with Coach and Chrissy, hey, you just got a two-for-one deal on one vote where they're both out of the game, and that's another random thing that feels like a coincidence. And so it's so easy. It really is so easy to do 24. You can't go beyond 24, but 24 is so simple. And with 90-minute episodes, there's no reason you can't increase your cast. Because if you think about it, we used to have hour-long episodes with 20 people. You have 30 more minutes now, and you can't add four people? That's crazy. You can do that.
Yeah, and I think – I know the way you propose is one option. And I'm not saying there's one way of doing it. I will just provide the counter – like to why they didn't do it early. I understand them wanting to do maybe one or two episodes of single elimination just so that like these people that we've been dying to see on our screens for so long. I mean, not all of them, not Joe, for example. Just an example.
Ozzy had 19 confessionals in that first episode. You didn't get to watch those people anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
Like I get why it's single elimination early. And I'm okay doing post-merge double boots. Like, again, we're pretty high on Power Broker. At least it played out really well. That was the best episode of the season. The pairs thing, we were like, that's kind of kooky, but not totally unfair, and it kind of worked. Like, you can still do those fun things, but, there's a road. There's a path, and it doesn't even need – because I can hear the counter argument saying, oh, you want to leave people on – so you get to know them and like make sure we get to episode three and we still have enough players left. You can even start doing that later. You can say episode three to six, we're doing double elimination. And then you still do your pairs. You still do your Power Broker. Like there are ways to go about it. And it was just gone about in like a very, very bad way. Like they picked like the only, like one of the least optimal paths to get to a final three. Like, the amount of six-person finales we've had in this show And you're going to give me a 24-person cast and we're doing a 5-person finale? I mean, that alone is a head-scratcher.
Yeah.
And yeah. It's Ceri that's the sixth. Like,
I know. It's a Devin Ceri double boot.
I think the other thing that I was going to say about 24, like, why do we like old school and they're like forever? I will be. What's interesting is I've seen a lot of people recently hit the 50 and they're like, I want to watch the old seasons. So I've talked to 3 or 4 people in the last week about the finale and they go, what should I watch? Okay, I didn't know about China. I didn't know about Pearl Islands. Okay, I did Kagyan already. What else? And there's people that are binging through seasons and seasons. And one thing that I find more compelling about the old school stuff that I think it's time to either let's do that thought process, whether it's movies, whether it's TV shows, whether it's reality TV shows, like there was more thought put into this whenever it was Amazon or like literally even Africa of we have 8v8. There's this one twist that's going to come here. We know we have world-class people that are fun to watch because we trust our casting department. It isn't, there's no spaghetti getting loaded into a catapult and being like, here's our pull when we need it. And what I'm trying to say is, I do think me specifically, somebody at CBS can do this. It doesn't have to be Blake Meyer. Here's our 24. Eliminate 4 of them. We're going to go with 20. Let's start with 2 tribes of 10, then go down to 3 tribes. Or eliminate 8 of this 24, and we're going to go to 16. These other people, maybe we can have them come in as cameos. They're still part of this season, but just in different ways. And do we need 12 new era people? Do we need 12 old era people? What is the exact number to make this make sense? Like, we need the person who has the good ideas, like a director, a showrunner, to confidently say this stuff. And if they are saying bad ideas, we do need somebody to go, hey, I'm not sure if we need all 12 of these new era people. I can justify 4 to 6 of them, but 12 seems like a lot. Should we rethink some of this? Or what is the idea of this? If it's not new era versus old era, why would there be 12 of them?
Well, and what worries me, though, with cutting off 4 people from the 24-person cast is we know that the 2 people who would have been cut off from the old school would have been Rick Devens and Aubrey. So the winner of the season and maybe the most entertaining person on the season would have been who they cut off. Like, I don't trust them to make the right decision of who they're cutting. So I actually do think if you're going to do a returning player season, it might be better to do more people. And this way, the cream can actually rise to the top because they wouldn't have cat like Rick Devens would not have been on the season if it was a 20-person season. Could you imagine?
The other layer for you, Phil, for that thought process, I think you can go look at our preseason stuff or go look at our cast assessment when it gets announced, who's going to be one of the 5 most entertaining people. I'm pretty sure all of us raise our hand and say Rick Devens. Mm-hmm. So we know that. How does CBS even think that he's like an, yet at that point we're like, there's going to be 24 and we put him on. But at that point, why do you ever let Rick Devens think of the thought process of he's an alternate or not good enough? If it's motivation, that's pretty shitty. If it's your actual thought, that's pretty dumb. Like there's no the idea of alternates for this 50th season should not even be stuff we're talking about. Like there's just so much noise around this season where it's like it's too big and there's too many moving parts where if you knock off half of these moving parts, we can actually like listen to our players and have them play against each other instead of like, all right, here's my group of 3 and your group of 3. Hopefully if we get the right color bandana, we're going to all be on the same page. It's like, that's just not fun to watch.
Mm-hmm. I agree. All right. So that brings me to the next one. 12 new era, 12 old school. Blake, you already talked about it. I mean, why did they do this? This is a clear didn't work. God. Why did they do this?
I mean,
I think we know why, right? Like, I'm less upset, especially with the cast increasing to 24 people. First time new era players have been eligible for returning player season. Like, I get that they want to start a new crop of two multi-time players who are going to have a higher legendary status due to multiple outings. Like, that was the goal here. And I do think it worked in some regards. Like, I think you have Rizzo as, like, you know, a back-to-back fourth place finisher is kind of cementing himself as like a new era legend. Jonathan really upped his value and legacy. Genevieve got screwed, but we all want to see Genevieve back. Seems like Tiff is well on her way to playing a third time. So, like, this is not a mystery to me. Like, this adds up. And we have a comment. Where is the comment? It was a comment saying that 49 should have been new era all-stars. Oh, here it is. Right here. Yeah. Like, we're looking at season 50, but, like, I think it's fair to look at, like, why was this the first returning player season we've had in 9 seasons? Why did we have to go 9 seasons of all newbies and then save everybody up? Because that kind of forced your hand to do half and half. Like, if they do season 50 and they have a 24-person cast and there are, like, 4 to 6 new era players, I think that would feel a little bit odd. But, like, if they had done a new era's all-stars or a new era's second chance or – you know, some way to promote or to get these multi to build up your stars of your franchise. Like, you need new blood, you need new stars. It's like any industry, like, you know, the NBA, we're losing LeBron and Steph, but guess what? Wemby is big ticket. Like, Wemby, Shea just won back-to-back MVPs. Luka is amazing. Jokic is amazing. Anthony Edwards is awesome. Like, we're raising up the young bloods. They'll get there. Jalen Brunson just made his first finals. Like, Survivor needs to do that. Like, they need modern people because a lot of, like, our old school people are getting old. Like, Survivor's been on a long time. We're going to age out a lot of the people.
Yeah, Ceri's 56 years old.
Yeah, like, Ceri's probably not playing again. Coach isn't playing again. Kobe's not playing again. So I get the let's give these people their final shots, legends of the show, but I totally understand why they needed to have 50% of this cast be new era players.
But, Will, the question is, because the title of this is what worked and what didn't. Did it work?
I think it worked.
I don't think it did.
So I've got 12 names. Let's go piece by piece. Did Jonathan make his stock rise on the second season?
Well, don't spoil this because that's Thursday's
podcast. We're literally doing a whole podcast on that.
Oh, shit. Never mind. So I'll do it the other way. I think of these 12 people, before, without hindsight 2020, I think, and this is a little bit of personal Blake bias, but we'll see. I think you could have done D, Q, Genevieve, and Rizzo and walked out of there with 4 new era people. And
give me Emily instead of D so that you don't have a winner.
Yeah, but, like, if there's only 4 new era players, you're opening up yourself that none of them make the merge, and then it's like you have no new era stars, you have no personality.
But it kind of goes back to the point you were making earlier where it's like the biggest mistake is that this was the first chance for all of them to come back,
right? So I think you
should have built up your stars before,
right? And we talk about that a lot with players, you know, within the game of Survivor, that, like, oh, is this move a good move or bad move? And I go, well, you know, we say it's kind of neither, because you were damned if you do, damned if you don't. If Christian votes out Mike White, he ends up losing. If he doesn't vote out Mike White, we don't have the answer, but he likely loses. I mean, that's pretty far out, but, like, we do talk about that a lot, where, like, you're not in a winning position. I think you can maybe look at season 50 in that way, where, like, the fact that they had waited this long to bring back any new era players and to build up their new era stars was, like, that was the inherent issue, and that, well, and nothing on season 50 that was ever going to solve that.
And the other problem is it was also the first time anybody from 37 could come back. It was also the first time anybody from 38 could come back. It was also the first time anybody from 39 could come back. It was pretty much the first time anybody from 36 could come back because, you know, Dom was the only one that you really could, like, Edge of Extinction was the only chance. And it was pretty much the only time you could bring back somebody from 35 again. So you have five seasons where you pretty much, you have to add them into the other nine seasons. You have 14 seasons that didn't have a chance to come back and play another time. And when you look at how many people were on this cast from those 14 seasons, don't count Aubrey, because obviously Aubrey had played in season 32. What is it, 18 of them? Because it was Colby, it was Jenna, it was Sari, it was Ozzy, it was Steph, and it was Coach. Are those the only six that were and then Aubrey, so seven. Seven of the 24 people weren't from that window. So clearly it was a problem if they just waited too long, because you couldn't just make 50 a legendary type season because you didn't even allow for these other players from the late 30s. I mean, Dave versus Goliath literally could have had 9 or 10 people play Survivor a second time. I know that sounds ridiculous, but it's true. That cast is so beloved from top to bottom. Instead, we've had three and they all just played on this season, which means you have to leave off Davey. You have to leave off Gabby. You have to leave off even going a little bit further back. Like if Johnny Mundo wanted to play again, you can't bring him back. Dan Regenering. I don't really love Dan, but Dan gets absolutely screwed on that season. You could have brought Dan back. I always love Carl. Like there's so many people from that cast that are compelling. Even Natalia from the pre-merge, Natalie from the pre-merge. Like there's so much going on there. And now Blake is laying down. I don't know why. But my whole point is just like
this there just was got so many off the rails off my point is what I'm trying to do.
No, well, I mean, you're trying to say you were just falling back. I just think that there's a lot of people that you could pull from. And so you have to lump them in with the new era. You can't just say, oh, it's just new era. Like there are 17 people that didn't have a chance on this season to play a second time. And they came back. And then 12 of them are from the new era. And that's why I say I don't think using 12 from the new era really worked, because yeah, you built up Tiff a little bit, but she was irrelevant for half the season. You know, Q and Genevieve and Camilla, like they're all gone so early that it's a bummer. Jonathan and Joe, like Joe does not compare to everybody else on the season from an entertainment standpoint. Like he's not there. Emily Flippin never felt like she was actually able to get her legs under her. She just kept kind of bouncing back and forth. I don't necessarily think that it worked to put 12 of them on there. I think it is better because I think another point is that final five is probably, as Will pointed out before the season began, the most disappointing final five the show could have possibly had. And then we had it. And it actually was disappointing, as opposed to if you have a final five from a normal all-star season. Like I always rip on all-stars, but you still have Rupert in there. And he was the biggest thing coming on to that season. So how much can you really complain about that final five compared to this one where there was nobody that people were really clinging on to? So I don't know if I totally lost your point, Blake, but I don't feel like I did.
No, I'm trying to talk about the math of the 24 versus if we only have four new era people, we can eliminate six out of the 24. We have an 18-person season. Is that the right math? No, 16-person season. But if you add two more, let's say, okay, we put Jonathan and D back in, and now that is an actual 18. We have six new era, six whatever, whatever. It's not double. It's one
third.
It's third instead of
six half. Out of 18. Yeah, yeah.
There we go. Go.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that wouldn't be – I don't know. I get why they had to do 50-50. Like, you have to give your new – like, these are the people that are going to be – playing and returning player season.
But how many of these people do you want to come back and say, wow, I really like
that's tomorrow, Blake. That's tomorrow.
I just don't think it's that many.
Well, but the other thing is, Will, I feel like you've totally changed your tune from the beginning of the season where you were complaining that you didn't think anybody from the new era should have been on the season.
Well, my big issue was like during the casting process, you would hear rumblings and it's like this from like the Survivor Insider desk. Boop, 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 breaking news. It looks like season 50 is leaning more old school with only 2 to 3 new era names being considered. And then when that doesn't happen, I think that was an example of like expectations versus reality, and that our expectations were like we were led completely astray. If it from the start was like, hey, this season of 50 is the first time New Era players can come back and they're going to get the representation, it would not boggle my mind or be mysterious as to, like, oh, I get it. Like, it adds up. My issue when the cast came out is because for so long we were told it was going to go nostalgia, old school heavy. We were reaching back for Penner, Sean Rector, Tiber, like the names being tossed out. And then when you wake up and you see 12 New Era names, I'm like, yeah, that kind of pisses me off and doesn't make sense. It's not what I'm told. But I still understand why they did that. And I think maybe something they should have done, I think, and we can convert our conversation here now, is the theme. Like, I think the theme fell really flat. I think the theme was really stupid. I think the theme was like a big way for Jeff to be like, gotcha to the fans, or like, I told you so, or you don't know what you're talking about. There was no part of this theme that, like, really the fans did not get to decide on anything. And I've said this from the start, in a franchise, in a show that has already opened up, you know, partial casting of their show to the fans, to call this season in the hands of the fans and not do that was an immediate slap in the face. Like, you've already done that before. So that should have been a bare minimum for a season with this title. The categories were lame. They all felt like, do you want idols or no idols? Like, no one's asking for no idols. No one's ever said, like, it's like you're not listening. It was everything was a straw man argument from Jeff. Do you want twists or not? Or what should the advantage level be? Like, not even defining them, like standard, dynamic, or strategic. Like, what does that even mean? There was no transparency. You weren't voting on specific twists. No one voted for the pairs. No one voted for the Blood Moon. No one voted for Jimmy Fallon. Nobody voted for Billie Eilish or Zach Brown or Mr. Beast. Like, these were not things voted upon. I think outside of fire making at Final Four, I think that maybe is the only, like, who cares the buff colors? Who cares what the immunity idol looks like? Like, this theme fell completely flat. And I'm transitioning to this part because I think there was probably better themes on the table that they could have done. Like, they absolutely, like, if you have 12 New Era players and 12 old school, like, give me two tribes of 12 and we do, like, Battle of the Eras. Like, to me, I'm already, like, that's already more compelling and interesting. Like, I'm already more in on, like, this bullshit whitewash theme of that, like, the fans have control or say in the format of the show.
Well, and I don't understand why, if they wanted to go 12-12, they didn't just do that. And even to the point of on each tribe, when we found out they weren't going 4-4-4-4-4-4, it was like, then Why did you do this? It made no sense. And maybe they were scared to make it eras facing off against each other because they didn't want it to turn into an old school versus new school kind of mentality. But that was going to be there in the final vote anyway. If there was ever an old school player sitting there, they were going to get the votes over the New Era people. Like, that was just going to happen.
You don't know that, though, because a lot of the people online and voting are more recent fans. Like, there's a world where Savannah is getting, and I guess Savannah Rizzo.
No. I'm saying on the season. I'm not saying, like, us voting people in.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm just saying, like, if you, like, you're scared to do old school versus new school, but I don't know why. And it's almost like they didn't want it to be a battle of the eras, but it's like, just do it. Like,
I think that's more interesting. And like, look, if the New Era players win the first challenge, you're like, damn, we're losing an old school player. Sure. But you're also getting to watch the old school players play and go to Tropic Council.
Yeah.
And like, you know, then you're probably going to do three episodes of that. You're going to swap after three episodes or maybe after two, like the beginning of the third episode, you're probably tribe swapping. So like, they could have, I don't know, the fan thing just never worked. It never worked. It never had a chance of working. Jeff was not relinquishing any real power to the fans. It was just a big farce. It was a complete and utter farce.
I mean, it felt so half-assed. I mean, I don't think any of us are disagreeing with that. I mean, Blake, you're on the same boat, I know, but like, how like, in the hands of the fans for season 50, and then it's like, oh, here's what you're going to vote on. Like, what do you think about the look of this immunity necklace? And it's like, who cares? I already forget what the immunity necklace looks like. Like, who cares? And the things that we actually wanted to vote for, again, it was like, remember, the fan said this. That's why we're doing Blood Moon. It's like, if you asked any fan, if you actually said, like, let's vote on will there be Blood Moon or will there not, that's going to be as polarizing of a no, or as emphatic of a no, as fire was an emphatic yes from fans. And I know people will say, well, it was 60-40. California in the last presidential election was 60-40. And nobody's ever going to say that that's a purple state. So, like, I think 60-40 is, like, pretty damn convincing that, yes, more fans like fire than don't. And I think pretty much if you were to ask each individual twist, most people are probably going to say no to every single twist that was on this season. So yeah, I think In the Hands of the Fans was a total flop. Total flop.
The one thing that I'm like, why didn't they spend 3 hours doing this? Do you remember what original tribes were people were on? And it's like, well, we let them be on those original tribes so they didn't get voted out. And it's like, why is there not a rhyme or reason to those original tribes? Could there have been the outlast tribe, the outwit tribe, and the outplay tribe?
Now we're talking.
Could it have been brains, brawn, beauty, but differently said? Could it be strategizers? Could it have been winners and final tribal people, final tribal losers? Could it have been people voted out with an idol? Like, they have the same survivor traumas or something. Like, I feel like that 3 hour meeting where it's like, let's figure out our starting tribes so people can go. I know damn well what Michelle, Aubrey, and Ty's tribes are whenever they make it through the end and there's one on each one. Oh, wait, that's two beauties. It's something where it's like heroes versus villains had that same thing of three villains. Mm-hmm. I know there wasn't three tribes or whatever. And it's like, yeah, why are we not doing that extra stuff instead of being like, okay, we don't want Mike White to be on the same tribe as Angelina or Christian. And it's serendipitous that it happens and then Christian betrays him anyway. It's like, it's almost cooler if the producers give them the option to betray each other and then Christian does it at Final 24 and everybody's like, what the fuck, dude?
Well, that's like when Tony and Sandra are on the same season and on the same tribe to start Game Changer. Remember, I was being like, what? And wasn't Sarah on the same tribe as Tony to start Winners at War? Like, Tony was with either Sandra or Sarah, and it was like, wait, that was the easy people to separate. Like, if that's your better story, if that's your better TV, then just do it. And I do think that there were some really big missed opportunities this season with that as well, because In the Hands of the Fans, yeah, we all wanted to see Christian, Mike White, and Angelina interact. We got lucky and got that, but there were a lot of players we didn't get to see. We never saw Kyle and Camilla together again. So, like, they both came back, and we didn't see them at all together. We didn't see Joe either.
So, and here's one that popped in my head earlier. I think these are decisions that our production company is saying, we are the smartest ones at doing. We are the ones who will pick starting tribes because we know best. We are the ones who will do random swaps because we know best. And I think some of my favorite moments about Survivor is the kind of stuff where it's like, kidnap a person from the other tribe, saving them from the vote. It's like a fake exile island and they'll go work on your beach. Well, wouldn't that be cool in an all-star season where we had an alliance, but I want to protect the person from my season, Camilla, and everybody that's with Kyle's like, no, dude, we're not going to give you a free pass. Like, we'd rather do that person that it doesn't matter for. Or let's have a pick 'em where people do have history. It's not just random people where I'm going to pick the strongest dude because I've seen him kick my ass in all these challenges. I'd rather have the strongest dude on my tribe next time. Now it's actually, well, I know how Devin's plays and I think he aligns with me and I don't have an idol yet. I need to be with an idol somewhere. Devin's, come on over. Like, all of that stuff is so much more interesting in all-star seasons. And it's like, why aren't we doing fun, interesting thing on all-star seasons? Why is it just, how can we make the all-starness of this season not matter?
Mm-hmm. Audrey Radijak, we never had a schoolyard pick for starting tribes in an all-star season. Have we ever even had a swap?
Well, I'll say this, though, just a counterpoint to the schoolyard pick for an all-star season. You want to combat best you can against pregame alliances. Like, it's harder to tell the story of why people are together. And so if you let them,
but it's easy with the schoolyard pick because it's like, well, Will picked me. That's why we're aligned.
Yeah, but you're like, why did you pick me? Oh, because we talked before the season and there's no footage of it and there's no real, like, tangible narrative that we can create. I'm not saying it couldn't work. I'm just like, I get why production handles splitting up the tribes on returning player seasons to do their best to ensure that everyone has like an equitable start, and which, you know, you'll never get there. Everyone has their own connections and everyone's seeing each other's seasons, or, you know, in this case, two people hadn't, but like everyone's going to have their own. There's no way to do it fairly. Like your past does matter and it will come to haunt you or help you in some way. But like, I get why they don't want a schoolyard pick.
And I think it was pretty interesting that like they didn't put four and four new era and old era men and women on each one. Mm-hmm. There were lopsided things everywhere.
Yeah, that was
and
weird.
It's so disappointing Chrissy didn't have a way in with the old people. It's like she was the only old school woman on her tribe.
Yeah.
The other three were like, yes, queen, let's work together.
And it feels and like you'd be like, trying to combat that with not allowing a schoolyard pick, and yet it happened anyway.
Right. And her male representative to maybe get her into the old school's coach. And it's like, good luck. And like, yeah. Chrissy's just screwed from her right away.
Yeah. I don't know. In the all this stuff, yes. Yoshi Lover, 765, thank you. The specialist extensive coverage made this season for me. Cheers for that. Yeah, we've been extensive, that's for sure. As Blake yawns his way through that comment. What a time to yawn, Blake.
No, my bad. It's just more of like we're getting every juice. But which one of these new era people would you want to see play again?
And that's what Thursday is going to be, Blake. I know. Thursday's going to be
our wait till 50, dude.
Legacies of every player from Survivor Season 50. That'll be on Thursday. Is there anything that we didn't talk about that we should have with what worked and what didn't on this season? I mean, we covered the theme, we covered the twist, we covered the cameos,
I would like to talk about Jeff's hosting, not Jeff's producing. Jeff's hosting.
Uh-oh.
How good is Jeff hosting? Is it subpar, average, above average, Emmy worthy, all time? Where are we at in your mind of Jeff Probst's ability to host the show in 2026?
I'm letting Will go first. I can see Will is leaning back, just being like, I'm about to put Blake in his place. So Will, you just go first?
No, I mean, Jeff as a host is like top notch, top of his game, should win the Emmy every year. I mean, what he does at Tribal Council alone, without an earpiece, you know, having a conversation and doing that. I mean, he's had the most experience in the world of anyone hosting Tribal Councils. And for that reason, he's the best to do it. I think he did a really good job of like making the season feel important. Obviously that is in the post-production as well with like the super cut at the start and the premiere, but even like welcoming everyone on the beach at challenges, even when he's participating in a challenge, he's hugging a lot of contestants. Like he made the season feel important and great, and he probably made it feel greater than it was. And without him, I think this season is even like lower tier. Like he did a good job of making it feel special and celebrated. So I will give him that.
I just rewatched, or my wife was watching the finale, so I finally watched it on TV. And I actually did think like the way he rebounded from the Rizzo thing, most other hosts couldn't do that.
Oh, truly. No, he's a professional. And we covered why that wasn't his fault extensively. Yeah. If you want to hear Phil and I break it down, like it really, that does not fall on Jeff.
Yeah, it doesn't. But at the same time, it's like him rebounding from that and the way he handled it, I thought that was great. The only thing I knock him big time for on this season was when he did talk to Mr. Beast and he said this little show Survivor or whatever. It's like, dude, you've been on for 26 years. You're a cultural touchstone. Like you're literally... Film has been talking for 99 years. The Jazz Singer came out in 1927. Survivor has been around for 26 of those 99 years of talking pictures. Like, that's crazy to think about. Okay. You're not some little show, especially when you get the ratings you do and people know. You can go back and pull somebody from 26 years ago, like they did with Jenna Lewis, and people are going to be like, oh shit, I want to see what Jenna Lewis has to say. And people are clamoring for Greg Buis and stuff. Other than that, though, I think he did do a good job this season, like not talking about his producing. I think a lot of the decisions that are made around twists and advantages, he's got his thumb way too much in that pie. And I think those suck. But I do think as a host, I think he handled it well. I think, like, you know, the moment with Ozzy, when Ozzy got voted out, he knew that that moment had to be Ozzy's, and Ozzy's stare back and that shot over the shoulder where Jeff didn't say anything. I mean, that's the stuff that, like, he really does understand. So, yeah, I think that Jeff as a host is very good. It's when he starts doing stupid stuff. I know people are talking about the rap in the chat here. Like, yeah, the rap is awful. There's no denying that. But when it comes to the actual hosting of the show, I think Survivor fans take him for granted big time. And I think that Jeff is phenomenal at it. I just wish that he would let other people who are more of challenge people, who are more of, you know, whatever else, just get more involved. But then again, when you watch what happens at that reunion, when he has to take his hands off and let somebody else take control, that's what happens. So I'm just saying, like, maybe he doesn't want to. I mean, Blake, you can roll your eyes at it, but, like, that was Jeff out of control. And how'd that work out for everybody? It was a disaster. So, like, you got to make sure you also have the right people there, right? And this is Pellegrinot before you answer, Blake. This is the first season I followed you guys and I loved it. Thanks for the fantastic content. Keep up the great work. Thank you for finding us. All right, Blake, now tell us why Jeff stinks at life.
It's not that crazy. I think I am not officially over the Jeff, but I am now craving a new flavor of host for the show.
Was that the open era? Are we open to new hosts?
Are we open to new hosts? I'm hoping for a new...
You're hoping it's open.
The thought process is, I think the rap is a funny thing. I think whenever he does the blood moon, I think was a very weird thing of him talking about the blood moon for 5 minutes. Like, it was a card from Magic the Gathering. And, like, every so often there's something and you're just like, these people are all over 25 years old. None of these people have this level of whimsy. This is a million-dollar thing for them. Like, Survivor used to be something where it's like life or death. I think every time we see the thought process of, like, wasn't that crazy, guys? Go right now to survivor.com and apply. It's your time. I'm kind of over those by now. And I do think the weird thing that happened at the finale is, like, Jeff, you got to watch the episode as it's coming live, like, just to know where you are in the thing. I used to work in news for a solid couple, maybe 4 or 5 months. And it was something that, like, that's the difference between somebody that you got to be in an earpiece or not. If you don't want to have that responsibility, where's your earpiece? So we can tell you where we're at. And I just think the relationships and friendships Jeff has with certain cast members, it did come through on the screen. I think one thing that did bother me whenever he was like, Suri, why don't you say the tribe has spoken? You're like, nope, we need you to do the, like, the whole routine, because this is what's important and cool about, like, it's Suri's one vote off where she got the majority votes. Like, get her out of here, Jeff. Say, do the thing. And it's like, all right, Suri, why don't you say it? I don't know. There's just, I think it's something whenever maybe you have people that annoy you in your class or people that annoy you on a bus or whatever, where they could probably do nothing right. But it is something where it's like,
that's what's happening, Blake. You're annoyed with Jeff's producing and Twist and him, like, driving the show into the ground with his producing decisions, that even when he has a faux pas hosting that you don't totally agree with, you're like, this is the worst thing in the world.
Because the one thing that I think, let me point one out, and I don't know if this is a producing or hosting, and you can tell me. Rizzo says out loud, whenever we break up into two different groups at 10, or it's 9, because Jonathan counts twice, it's like we're having two final five votes, and that's something you need to think about. And Jeff goes, oh, it is like we're having two final five votes. And I'm like, brother, how is that not, like, literally the whole point of this? And hopefully that's not a light bulb moment for your host slash producer who's put this on the track. But I was just like, how is Rizzo
to me, that's a great hosting moment and a terrible producing moment. So that's, again, it has nothing to do with his hosting. Because to me, it's like you're making your player sound smart and you're not making him then look stupid to the audience if Jeff goes, oh, yeah, no duh, Rizzo. But it's a bad producing moment because if Jeff's not realizing that, then that actually is a problem with Jeff. So
yeah, but like, I don't know. I'm not going to get hung up on that. Like Rizzo saying it's like two Final Fives and Jeff being like, oh, you're right. That's great insight. It's like you still are at Final Nine. So you're voting out the ninth and the eighth person. So it's like if it hasn't crossed Jeff's mind that this is a Final Five vote, which it isn't, like it's not Final Five. Like that's not that bad of a thing to say. And I think just the way Rizzo phrased it, Jeff, you know, like that Jeff's going to hype up his players as Phil kind of alluded to, like, you're going to make your players sound smart, make them sound educated about the game. I don't think it's him going like, whoa, I had no idea. It's like, we are still at Final 10 or we're still at Final 9, Final 8. So like I'm not going to hold that one against Jeff. And the Ceri thing, like, I'm like, it's season 50. I'm here for a little bit of the corn, a little bit of the cheese.
Where are you going?
Like, I want my cheese corn. I'm going to Jukaku. I'm ordering cheese corn. It's season 50. It's okay to have a lighthearted, friendly returning player season where we're just going, let's all just pat each other on the backs for having this
hell of a lot better than her crossing the balance beam. That's for sure.
Right. Like, I'm okay to like get the cheese corn and put it on the grill at Jukaku and heat it up. Let that thing sizzle, and I will down all of that cheese corn because it was a celebration. They are kind of hamming things up and saying, look, we've been doing this 50 seasons. Like, let's lighten up a little bit. I'm totally, totally cool with that.
Blake, my only question to you is, if you're related, are you related to Richard, Tom, and Kevin? Because you
I couldn't hear you. Someone was sneezing.
You are petty, Blake.
Bro. Final four challenge where he's like, doesn't it feel like there's thousands of people out there rooting for you right now?
Why does that bother you?
It really did. It's like, why? No, there's no one there. We're in Fiji.
You
get to the challenge, bro.
You like, Blake, do you ever do – this is a serious question. Like, you don't ever do anything. You're like, man, like you're playing in a game or, like, you never had a moment, like, when you're growing up where you just, like, are like, man – like there's a big crowd that cares about what I'm doing right now. Like I ran cross country. Like when I would win a race, it was like, damn, like you're out there running. You feel like there's more people watching you than there are. Like, I don't understand why that bothers you so much. That's weird. That's weird.
Whenever I win, I just get up and I start gritting, dude.
Like I just,
that's where the magic happens.
I just think it's a little, petty. That's all. That's all.
I guess I probably – oh, wait. If you go look, I feel like people are more over Jeff online than they've ever been. So it just feels nice that other people feel this way whenever I was one of the only people probably feeling this way 3 years ago.
I mean, my thing is – and this isn't actually meant to knock you, but a lot of the people who are ripping Jeff right now, I don't want to be on my side. And I don't mean that like – I mean like the internet people who are like, I hate Jeff so much. The other things that they hate and the other things that they praise, I don't really want to be associated with them anyway. So that's just my take on that. You know, I mean, if those are your friends, Blake.
No, Phil and Will are my friends and they hate me too.
I mean, Will got up twice. Will went and did dishes.
He sneezed.
Like he wouldn't stop sneezing. He did it extra loud. He brought his microphone with him so he could sneeze into
the microphone. You can review the tape.
While Blake was talking, just so you wouldn't hear Blake talk.
I was going to sneeze loudly, so I got up and sneezed off camera, and then I ran out of coffee, so I made more coffee.
So, all right, I think we're good. I think we can wrap this one up. Blake, take us home. Give it to Tom Farrell here. He says, Blake celebrates with a gross boy dance. Blake, Jeff just got fired from Survivor. Let's see it. Oh, yeah. He's feeling it. That's it. Anyway, all right. We're back on Thursday, and we're going to be talking about the legacies of all 24 players. As you can see, Blake just can't wait to do it. He was already trying to do it tonight. So we're talking about the legacies of all 24 of these players, whether they improved, went down, didn't do anything, if we think we'll see these people play again. And that really will be our final Survivor 50 episode. So again, if you're listening now, thank you. Like this video, subscribe to the channel. Go check out Blake and I talking over on Spotify and on podcasts. about Aubrey's journey through Survivor. We started with Ko Rong and kind of went through the whole thing and her ups and downs throughout the history of the show. It's not on YouTube. So for anybody who's here now, if you haven't found that, go find it. Otherwise, patreon.com/thespecialist. Will and I did a fun rock draw today of 50 characters, one from each season for a season 50 cast. That is coming out tomorrow. We're into Ko Rong, as we have talked about a bunch. We got Q&As, Teg Talks. I know Blake and Teg with just put one out today about the right person winning all the time. We also got movies going on over there. John and I have been talking about Steven Spielberg science fiction movies to get ready for Disclosure Day, which we're excited about. So a lot of stuff going on the Patreon. It never ends over there. And next Thursday, I will be starting my new series with Once Upon an Island, where we're going to be doing Winning Survivor. This time, we did this back after season 40. We're going to be revisiting it, and we'll be doing 5 players per episode every Thursday from next week until 10 weeks later. So thank you all so much for listening. Hope you enjoyed this episode, and we will see you all on Thursday.
See ya.